It's time for the podcast, Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. Welcome to our second edition of this podcast called Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. I'm joined by Adam Awson, a writer for the weekly publication Current in Carmel. You can also find his writing at currentincarmel.com. My name is Larry Lannon. I write the local Fishers, Indiana news blog, larryinfishers.com. Today, we are joined by Amy Pozick, a photojournalist and writer for Current Publishing. She's also heavily involved in producing local independent films. Hamilton County Goes to the Movies is recorded each Saturday at Donatello's Restaurant in downtown Carmel. This podcast was recorded during the afternoon of July 1st. Welcome once again to our second segment. This is our second segment of Hamilton County Goes to the Movies, and we are very pleased. We appreciate the response we had on our very first episode. This is going to be a weekly program where Adam and I talk about film, and then we bring a guest in later. Our guest today will be Amy. Where's Amy? We'll be here, and we'll talk more with Amy Pozick, who is very involved with local filmmaking. So, Adam, I got to ask you one thing. You and your family run Donatello's Restaurant, which is where we record these. Anyone who follows you on social media knows you have experimented with a new dish called S'mores Gelato.
Oh, yeah. So I've been making gelato for about a year, and the s'mores gelato was actually really tasty. It was basically a chocolate gelato that I put kind of marshmallow fluff and graham crackers in. It was really good. It wasn't my biggest seller. I think people were a little hesitant or maybe thought it was a little too kiddy. I did make butterscotch gelato last night, and that sold out really well. But I've done that one about three or four times. But I'll do different flavors. Of course, inevitably, somebody will ask for a flavor that I didn't make. You know how life is that
I just thought s'mores gelato was a very creative idea. And so the people who tried it did like it.
Oh, everyone tried to like it, but it didn't fly off the shelves as quickly as my Spumoni or Neapolitan, which is a little bit more comfortable for people.
Well, this week, the movie we're going to highlight is Baby Driver. We basically foreshadowed that last week. Both Adam and I have had a chance to see it. Just a brief summary of the film. It begins with a young man in his early 20s who's basically making a living as a getaway driver. We later find out in the film that he owes something to a mafia boss. We later find out that he actually stole the guy's car, who normally wouldn't live very long doing it because he didn't know it was a mafia boss's car. But the mafia boss saw the talent in this baby driver and became the getaway driver for bank robberies and various other theft kinds of activities. He's just a master at driving. There's some terrific chase scenes in the film. There are some great bad guys, and there is, I think, a little bit of a love story, which is a thread that goes throughout and is important to the ending. So Baby Driver was a film that we were anticipating. We were hoping it was a good film. How did you feel about it, Adam?
Okay, I think we kind of agree, and my friends I went and saw it with me and my fiance and one of my friends from college who he sees far more movies than I do, and I see a lot. He, at the end, was like, he was actually a little disappointed. And he didn't say it was a bad movie, but I think his expectations were a little high. It's 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, and he was a fan, and I'm a fan, too, of the director, Edgar Wright. He did films such as Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and The World's End. Now, The World's End was probably the weakest of the films. This is probably better than that, but still ranks behind his other movies. So, you know, is it a good movie? Yes, it's a good movie. It's fun. It's got a lot going on. Is it a masterpiece? Probably not. We'll kind of go into some of that in a minute. What were your thoughts, Larry?
Yeah, I'm very close to where you and your friends were. I had expectations going into this film. I knew the chase scenes were going to be well done, and just based on what I knew about the technical people involved, and in fact, they were great. They were not, it wasn't Bullet, it wasn't French Connection, but it was very good. Excuse me. So I liked the way they did the chase scenes. That's not an easy thing to do technically, and they got that done. And I got to give Edgar Wright, the writer and director of this film, a lot of credit for that. I also really liked Ansel Elgort. I thought he underplayed that part the way the director wanted him to do it. He was very laid back, what you find out early in the film is that when he's doing these chases and getting away, he's always got his earbuds and he has to have music in. It turns out he had an accident when he was very young and as a young child, and always hears something, a humming or something in his ears that can only be cured by listening to music. And he's, and they let you hear the music he's listening to as he's driving away and doing these masterful getaway and angles with his car. Just a lot of talent there. But I like the way Ansel Elgort handled that. Just perfectly understated, I think. Laid back, but yet, you know, you really get to know him. And I think that was a tough acting job. Somebody to ask somebody at that age group to play a very laid back. And you know, most actors are not like that. They want to be very aggressive. He had to be laid back and kind of not as aggressive, and I think he succeeded in doing that.
That's a big nod too. I don't know if you ever seen the film Drive. You ever seen Drive?
No.
Okay, it's not for everyone. I really love Drive. It's a Ryan Gosling movie, but it's kind of violent. It's kind of artsy. In that movie, I think Ryan Gosling says about 6 words the entire film. So there's a lot of parallels between Drive and this film. Actually, I had another Ryan Gosling movie that people made comparisons to with this movie, and I didn't see it as much, but both my fiance and my friend noted La La Land because of the use of music. And I mean, there were scenes where Ansel Elgort was kind of dancing around as he listened to his earbuds and kind of had that energy. A film that I had a comparison to was both of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, because you have kind of that jukebox mixtape where it's not original music or a soundtrack, but picking out hits that other people might like and using that to kind of give momentum to the action sequences and story. I thought it was interesting the songs they picked, because it wasn't things that you hear on the radio every single day. There were a few well-known songs. There was Easy Like Sunday Morning, and I think Barry White, Never Gonna Give You Up. But beyond that, there was a lot of kind of electric mixes or some funk tunes.
And he does his own electric mixes, which is part of the story. I won't give away too much on that, but he actually has fun doing that, taking films and actually recording what people say to him in a tape recorder and mixing it into a kind of a song, a modern type song, you know, with all the rap background in it. So no, I agree with you on that, and I do think that, but the problem was I came into this film maybe with a lot of high expectations, like your friend did, and although there's a lot good to say about the film, but I would say it's just barely a good film, not a great one.
The problems with it is it falls into the same cliches we've seen in some of these car chase movies, or any kind of heist movie, because there's bank robberies too. There's one last heist and you're done. And the reluctant criminal who doesn't want to be involved, but he's sucked in. And if he says, if I just do one more, then I'll be done. And then he has the girl who doesn't know about it, and he loves her, and you know he wants to break free of that life. And then you have the criminals with all their different agendas. By the way, some of the side criminals in this movie, there's some interesting casting. There's John Hamm, who many people know from Mad Men, who was one of my favorite TV shows when it was on. You have
Jamie Foxx,
Oscar winner.
Who's a really, really bad guy in this film.
Yeah, he's really not a likable character.
No, neither is John Hamm, by the way.
Which is unusual for Jamie Foxx, because he's usually, even if he's a criminal, he's the likable character.
But he did, I mean, he pulled it off. I mean, it's not just typecast, you're right, but I think he did the act. He did the job of acting in this role pretty well. And John Hamm, excuse me, is the bad guy that really is there most. He's in a lot of scenes, let's put it that way.
And
a lot more scenes.
And they had to kind of change his appearance, too, because, you know, Don Draper, if you've seen Madman Slick Back suit. So here they kind of gave him a hip haircut. They gave him a neck tattoo, some scruffy beard. So they kind of, you know, roughed him up a little bit for John Hamm. But
agreed, and he came across as the guy, lifelong criminal. That's his job, and is to live a life of crime. The person I think that really kind of held the film together was Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey isn't in a lot of scenes, but he plays this crime boss, and you know he's played this a good part of his life, playing the bad guy, and I think he's got that whole idea down. He knows how to play the part.
I was looking at his filmography. You're just kind of surprised at how many films Kevin Spacey was in, and you kind of forget, oh yeah, he was in that, he was in that, and he always does a good job. Some of the movies are so-so, but it's never a bad Kevin Spacey performance. Yeah, I thought he did a good job. I don't know if they asked much of him. You know, he didn't have to flex all of his acting muscles necessarily, but he did a good job. One interesting thing, too, I was thinking about the movie. So the other day, they had Gone in 60 Seconds was on TV, the Nicolas Cage movie. And I think Robert Duvall is in that, too, or Angelina Jolie. But a big car chase movie. And similar to that in the Fast and the Furious movies, what I always noticed was there always seemed to be like a car commercial. They're showcasing the coolest cars, you know, the newest models. And this film was not that way. They were driving some everyday average cars, just beat up vehicles. And I thought that was kind of an interesting difference, is that you had a car chase movie. And you know what? He's going to be driving a car just like you.
Yeah, exactly. I like that, too. And you're exactly right. These were not hopped-up cars. Some of those cars were pretty old cars, in fact, that he was driving there. I think John Hamm gets a special shout-out in this film. I really think Ansel Elgort was a great performance. Spacey was playing his normal character. John Hamm is a very important character here and pulls that off. I would give an honorable mention to Lily James. And by the way, we're in downtown Carmel, and we will hear a siren every now and then right here on Main Street. But getting back to that, you know, I think an honorable mention goes to Lily James because she plays the girlfriend. And they put her in some really interesting scenes. She starts out as this just regular waitress girl who's got dreams and would love to do this and that. And then all of a sudden, you know, the film gets a lot darker, and she kind of rolls, her character rolls with it, and she does the acting job of changing the face of that character.
She does a good job. She was kind of a later addition to the show Downton Abbey, if you ever watched that.
It's been a while. I've seen it, yeah.
And then she, after that, kind of got her big starring role in a remake of Cinderella. Mm-hmm. So she's somebody who's kind of ascendant on a path there. I thought she did a good job. The interesting thing with the film, it starts off with a big car chase. And nice sequence there. Then you introduce who he is, but then you kind of slows down a little bit. You don't really have another big car chase until the end of the movie. And in the middle, they kind of explore the romance. And there was a nice scene where, not to give away too much, but she's a waitress in a coffee shop, and they're talking about music. Mm-hmm. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's not that cliche. It's kind of nice. It was actually a well-done dialogue back and forth between the two of them about just kind of the meaning of music, and he had certain songs that were meaningful to them, and they kind of joked back and forth about songs that they're named after. Her name was,
Mary.
No.
She was talking about Deborah.
That was her name.
Deborah's her name, but she was talking about how she has a sister named Mary, and she was lucky because all these songs had her name in it.
Oh yeah.
And Deborah, there weren't that many. There was one they found, and then, of course, his name's Baby. She laughed and said, "Oh yeah,
you got every song.
You got every song, and you don't have to worry about your name."
And then at the end of the movie, yeah. we get the title song, "Baby yeah. Driver," from Simon and Garfunkel, comes in at the end,
which goes back to 1970. I'm old enough to remember that, and that song was fairly popular for not being an A-side. It was an album cut and was a B-side of a hit film, or hit record, I should say. So you know, you've got and I was looking, okay, Baby Driver's the first thing I thought of when I saw the film title. You get the song, but not until the final credits roll.
And so again, Simon and Garfunkel music contribute to great films. Simon and Garfunkel have contributed to probably my top three, maybe one favorite movie of all time, The Graduate.
I was going to say The Graduate. That was their first
movie.
Film. Yeah, you know, Mike Nichols really used that music well to put that. Oh, The Graduate. And I think to understand where The Graduate came from, you know, I graduated from high school about the time The Graduate came out. And that was pervasive of the thought. You know, when that man pulls over the main character, Benjamin Braddock, and tells him, "Son, you know, one word," then he has a pause, plastics. You know, everybody had an idea what all these college graduates were supposed to do with their lives after they graduated from college. And that was the pervasive feeling. And Benjamin, of course, rejected that. And that's what the whole film The Graduate's about, and a lot of other things.
Not to get off topic. We're allowed to get off topic. It's our podcast. So,
yes.
But that two interesting trivia things I always thought was interesting about The Graduate. Mm-hmm. One, the music. a lot of that was not written for the movie.
It was already not. No.
And the song, Here's to You, Mrs. Robinson, mm-hmm. it was Here's to You, I think Mrs. Eisenhower.
That's right.
Mrs. Roosevelt. Mrs. Roosevelt. And they were like, we need one more song for the movie. Guess what? You're changing the name of that the character in that song.
There was quite a fight about that, but the studio won. Yeah.
Originally, Robert Redford was supposed to play the role. They said he was too handsome because he wouldn't know what it was like to be rejected by a woman. So this was
Dustin Hoffman's first big Hollywood film.
And he wasn't that much younger than Anne Bancroft.
That's great. That's right. Actually, in actual years, you're right. Yeah, he played the young kid. She played the older woman.
I think they were like 6-7 years apart, yeah. Something like that.
I watched that film again recently, and I thought, this does stand the test of time. And I think you get, this goes back to what I said before, it gives you a glimpse as to how society felt about certain things at that period in time. It's a peek into that
fun debate
world.
We always have. I watched this with my fiance. And we like to ask this question, what do you think happens to them after they're on the bus at the end of the movie?
I've had that thought many times. We're not giving anything away. This film has been around for years. At the end, she's getting married, and he pulls her away from that wedding, and they go off in a city bus, if I remember correctly, in Santa Barbara. I can't remember where it was. It's in California, and all these people are staring at them. And then I've always wondered, what happens next? They never did a sequel. Thank goodness. They'd have messed it up if they had. But
they kind of give each other this look, like, what now?
What do we do now?
And then Sound of Silence comes in, that song.
And that's not the first time Sound of Silence is in the film, but it certainly fit there. So to wrap up Baby Driver, I would say my view is there's a lot to like about this film. The director, Edgar Wright, he gets way too excited in too many parts of this film with gun death scenes. I mean, it's okay to put violence in a film. I have no objection to that if it fits in. But it was a shoot-a-thon there in the middle of the film, and I don't think we had to do that. I didn't get much out of that. So I think that's one thing that kind of slowed the film down to the point where I thought, okay, where are we going with this? But the story didn't need it. But overall, I gave it a C+ just because the chase scenes were great. There were good performances. Story didn't work the way I wanted or think it should for most of the audience. But that's where I come down on it.
Probably give it a little bit more in the B-ish range. Although, you'll learn from me, I have a hard time grading things. What really does it mean? But I will say this. If you're going to go to the movie theater and pick something out right now, I think it's a good choice. If you're... never go to the movies. I may not rush to the theater just to see this one. But if you're going to the movies anyway, I'd probably pick this over Transformers or, you know, whatever else is out right now.
If you rent or stream Bullet, I mean, that's a great chase scene film. Now, here's the thing that about chase scene.
Indiana's own Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen, my goodness. What a man. Grew up in Beech Grove, Indiana, and went to Hollywood. And I think one of the great films he made and was Le Mans. Actually, I'm a race fan. What I found out later is that when they filmed that film, they had no script when they showed up in Le Mans. They just had all these people who were going to shoot all the film around the race itself, and then they'd figure out a script later. Of course, the script didn't work out very well. It wasn't a very good film in terms of story. But some of those racing sequences are classic in that Le Mans film that he. I think that's one of his better films just in terms of... explaining and showing what an event is like. You know, you could probably do it about the Indianapolis 500 too. It shows that the crowd coming in, the sun comes up and the crowd starts coming in and the drivers come in. It gives you that feeling of being at Le Mans for that race. That was a good part of the film. But yeah, Steve McQueen is somebody that the film Bullet. The thing I was getting at about the chase scene films, I really do believe that you need to see a good chase scene in a movie theater. Because you're trapped there, you're in this big darkened room, and you've got the sound all around you, you've got this big screen in front of you, you really feel like you're in the car. I'm not saying it doesn't work if you watch it on television, even on a big screen. I just don't think it's quite the same.
No, I'm with you there. Mm-hmm. I mean, and sometimes the best car chase scenes have been in just one part in a movie. We've seen a lot of really good car chase scenes in Jason Bourne movies and James Bond movies. And sometimes it's just mixing up the setting. I think it was one of the Jason Bourne or Bond where they were kind of in the streets of Europe where it was cobblestone roads and they're going down there. And it kind of mixes it up to see the same, souped up Ferrari jumping over a bridge, It's been done. You got to kind of rethink it to some degree.
Well, some films do a better job of that than others. But yeah, I want to talk how, as we kind of wrap this segment up, pick one film you've seen recently we haven't talked about yet.
I watched a film called Life. I thought it was going to be good. I was.
Where did you see it?
So and streaming.
Okay.
I think it's in Redbox now, too, if you want to rent it. It is a sci-fi movie set in outer space at the International Space Station. It's two big stars in it, Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal. So that was what intrigued me. And I kind of like the outer space movies. I really enjoyed Interstellar, The Martian, Gravity. You know, those are all films that I think are fun, even going back to Apollo 13 or even The Right Stuff. This one really didn't hit. There was basically, they find life on Mars, and it's very exciting, and then the life starts to evolve and kind of take a mind of its own, and then it's killing the astronauts on the spaceship. And it goes from interesting sci-fi to really corny, you know, horror action movie, and the special effects are not great. And it becomes like this giant CGI tentacles that are wrapped around them. And it's a shame because Jake Gyllenhaal has become one of my favorite actors recently. I thought he was great in Zodiac. He was great in Prisoners, and fantastic in a film called Nightcrawler, which I know a lot of people didn't see. You know, he started off doing not a lot of great movies earlier in his career, but he's really hit a streak. This one was a miss. Ryan Reynolds, he's been, you know, Deadpool was a big hit for him. He was nominated for a Golden Globe and made a lot of money at the box office. And here he comes, does another dud, and he's had quite a few duds. I remember the one dud he had, R.I.P.D., which I still laugh as one of the dumbest titles for a movie, about ghost cops called R.I.P.D. I don't know who thought of that one, but Life, I would say, not even worth a rental. It was not very good.
Yeah, I really love space films that are done well. And there are many of them done well, but there are a lot of bad ones, unfortunately.
Probably my top all time would be 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Good or bad? You're saying that's a good film.
Oh, that's one of my favorite films. I like Stanley Kubrick. I know not everyone does.
And he came up with some special effects that other people had never tried to do it. And the way he did that, integrated the music into what was happening in those special effects. Very few people at that time knew how to do it that well. Oh, yeah. I still watch that film. And it had a story that was very interesting, and I think foreshadowed some issues we're dealing with today as far as artificial intelligence.
My fiance did say one thing about 2001: A Space Odyssey. She said, "This is a great film to fall asleep to." And I'm like, you know what? You're kind of right. It's very relaxing music.
The music will do it to you, just that alone. My wife and I, the night before we recorded this, went to see the new Beguiled, which is a Sofia Coppola film. And we have found, we both liked the film. My wife, however, saw the 1971 version. That was done with Clint Eastwood in the starring role as the, if you don't know what it's basically about a boarding house for girls, a very small one during the Civil War. The Civil War had been going on about 3 or 4 years at this point. It was in Virginia, and this Union soldier who is badly injured ends up on their property. They take him in, even though they're sympathizers of the Confederacy, and they nurse him back to life. And it's really about how these ladies, these young girls and ladies, deal with the idea that after 3.5 years of seeing very few men except just walking through as soldiers, they get to know this man and they all fall for him. How does that all work? Well, it ends up very interesting. I'm not going to talk more about that, but my wife kept saying, you know, I kept thinking Clint Eastwood every time I saw Colin Farrell in this film. I like the film a lot, and I think the reason I like it a lot is because the core of the story is about this group of women and how they react to this man. And I think Sofia Coppola, as a female director, took what is essentially a very good group of women as far as their acting skills are concerned, ensemble cast, and got them to act like women likely would in a situation like that. And it kind of shows me how we need more good female directors in Hollywood, because we don't have enough. We have some, but we don't have enough of them. Wonder Woman obviously is a great example. But Sofia Coppola, who is still growing as a filmmaker, every film she makes, I think, is a better film. I really like The Beguiled, and it's not a fast-moving story. It's kind of moves slowly along, but I enjoyed it.
I'll have to check that one out. I heard it was pretty good.
Okay, well, I want to say one more thing before we go. One of the unsung heroes in filmmaking are the stuntmen and women. There's some women who do this. A famous stuntman who sadly has been battling Alzheimer's the last few years. His name is Lauren James, 85. He was a stuntman and a body double for Steve McQueen, Paul Newman, Jack Nicholson, and get this, Debbie Reynolds. Men would dress up like women to do stunts. I think there was a Way the West was one. Is that the name of the film? Anyway, it was years ago, and she had to jump off a train into a cactus, and he dressed up like her and did that for her. So he's a very famous guy, was in a lot of films, doubled for all the famous actors you can think of in the history of Hollywood. Frank Sinatra, Michael Douglas, Kirk Douglas, Charles Bronson, Jack Lemmon. The list is on and on. So I think every now and then, I met a couple of stunt people once, and that they live a different life. I mean, a lot of them have been in the hospital several times. They've got broken bones. That's a dangerous way to make a living. But if we didn't have them, we wouldn't have some of these chase scenes, because you need stunt people to drive those cars.
And I will say the practical stunts still look better than the computer effects. They
do. Oh, yes.
I know the insurance is hard, and it's hard to set up some of these, but when you can do them, the practical stunts and the practical special effects, I still think are the best choice.
And they're a breed to themselves. They're just an interesting group of people. There have been a few films actually done about people who do stunt work. And from what I've heard from the real people in the business, those films are pretty accurate.
So next week, we were trying to think about which movie we're going to go see. We tentatively thought about Spider-Man Homecoming, because it'll be a big release that a lot of people will be interested in. They are trying to... This will be the third actor playing Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. They first had Tobey Maguire for a trilogy, and then Sony wanted to keep the rights, so they restarted the story again with Andrew Garfield, and made money, but maybe didn't have the critical success that they would have wanted. So now they've actually teamed up with Marvel Studios, which is owned by Disney, kind of a co-production. And so now, for the first time, we're going to see some of the other Marvel characters, like Captain America. Actually, Iron Man makes a pretty heavy appearance. Robert Downey Jr. is apparently in the movie a lot. That's going to cross over into this new Spider-Man movie, where it's set in high school. And the early reviews are pretty positive. They actually describe it almost like a John Hughes teen coming-of-age movie with superheroes. So superhero movies are what they are. They're fun. They can be hit or miss, but we'll see how that is. And if the listeners have any movies they would like us to go see or recommend that are coming up, how can they contact us?
Once again, and we'll have this a couple of other parts of our podcast as we do some of the introductions and so forth. We have an email address. Our email address is HamiltonCountyGoesToTheMovies@gmail.com. Adam is on Facebook. I know Amy, who's going to be coming up here in just a few minutes. Amy Pozick has a Facebook post that she uses when she listens to our podcast. So there are places to find it. You can go to LarryandFishers.com and find it. But the email address is there, and you can use it anytime. And we welcome your comments, and we hope you will. And if you have comments that are good, we'll take them. If they're comments that are bad, we'll still take them. We don't mind. We don't care. Okay, we'll end the segment out, and we'll be back with Amy here in just a few moments. A reminder that Hamilton County Goes to the Movies is recorded each week at Donatello's Italian Restaurant, 9 West Main Street in downtown Carmel. Ask for Adam's latest gelato dessert creation when you're there. Adam and I welcome your comments on our podcast. Send your feedback to this email address, HamiltonCountyGoesToTheMovies@gmail.com. That's HamiltonCountyGoesToTheMovies@gmail.com. Now, on to this week's guest. In our interview segment today, we're very honored to have someone you've read. If you're in a northern suburb of Indianapolis, particularly Hamilton and some of the adjoining counties, there's a publication series called Current. You have Current and Fishers, Carmel, Doblesville, et cetera. There are several of them. And in all those newspapers, there's a segment called Where's Amy? Well, we know where Amy is today. She's with us, and Adam is going to handle the introduction.
I know Amy for a while. Many of you probably have seen her if you've been to almost any event in Indianapolis, Fishers, or Carmel. She's the person there with the camera and also the big smile on her face. Amy, I don't know where she finds the time to go to all these events. Sometimes it feels like she's double booked, going to more than one thing at a time. But despite working all the time, Amy always has a sense of positivity. She's the champion for everyone and really makes everyone feel like a superhero. And she's going to... You start off, Amy, just tell us a little bit about your Where's Amy column and kind of how you got that started.
Yes, well, Where's Amy is just a super fun thing for me to do because I get to go to some of the best arts and entertainment events. I love to go to local charities that are making a difference. So I can go and take pictures and write a little about what's going on so that people can actually learn more about it and say, hey, how can I maybe go volunteer? How could I help? Or, you know, just exciting things like that.
Now, so, do you get to enjoy it as the same way any guest would, or do you have to kind of be the journalist when you're there?
Well, I have to tell you, I know so many people that are there, and it's so much fun because it's like I'm the queen of the court because I get to have fun being with friends and then also taking photos and meeting new people. I mean, the best thing about it is every event I go to, I always meet new people. And I find these incredible new things that are going on in town, locally. You know, Carmel, Fisher, Zionsville, Geist, Westfield. I mean, so there's so much going on that, I mean, I just love it because it's just constant information about positive things going on in the community.
You know, you're into independent films and independent filmmaking, and want to talk about some of the films you've been involved with recently. But in general, independent films are low budget, but they are young, up-and-coming movie makers, actors, that mostly people they know who will come in and help them produce these films. Sometimes it's hard to find the independent films. You don't always find them at the multiplexes. Sometimes you do, but not often. So talk about the independent films, what they are, and where you go about finding them.
Well, I've produced five local independent films. And the best thing is you can find them at different film festivals. The important thing about doing an indie film, I've worked on a lot of short films, and the reason people like to do that is because they can enter them into the film festivals, and then when people come from Hollywood or from all over the world, they can, you know, maybe see somebody or pick up something and you know, maybe find a new star, find a new director, you know. So it's just an exciting world. I produce films, so my part is to gather all of the essentials to make the film. We want to promote the film to make sure people are there. Recently, I just did a film called Submerged 51, and we had a wonderful... a wonderful production that we had at the Landmark Cinemas. And the exciting thing was is that so many people came up to me afterwards and said, Amy, are you sure that this film was made in Indiana? I mean, seriously, I cannot believe the special effects. And I mean, the acting is fabulous. Are you sure this was really made in Indiana? And that is what makes being a film producer just fantastic.
So tell me about this latest film you've done.
The film was written and directed by Demetrius Witherspoon. He is a Indianapolis Carmel resident. It's a sci-fi movie, and it just revolves around female heroism. And I don't want to give too much away because actually, after I get done with this interview, I'm going to be going to the In Conjunction festival where it will be featured there. And the exciting thing is Submerged Echo 51 will be the number one film that people have chosen to see at the 2017 Gen Con.
Okay. That's something to be proud of.
So yeah. I imagine, how did you get into this? Because when I was, you talk about making independent films, and you know, just me personally, when I was a kid, my parents had the old beat-up camcorder, and they let me and my brother basically use it, and we would make our own home movies and stuff, and Gosh, if anyone found those, that'd be some blackmail material there. I think we're pretty embarrassing some of those made-up movies that we would make. But did you kind of have, when you were younger in school, did you kind of have an interest in films, or did it kind of catch that bug later in life?
I've always had a bug for acting. I've been in certain films, but I've loved film. I mean, it's something where you can kind of escape the world and just go and just escape, and I love it. So yes, I too picked up a camera and I had fun, and I have to admit I'm not the best editor or, you know, sound person, but that's why I stick to my actual camera. But
did you have a student film or something you worked on young?
I didn't work on any student films.
Okay.
No, but I will say that producing is probably my knack, because that's where I can get everybody to the actual theater. Yeah.
Interesting. Now, if somebody wants to, for instance, see the most recent film that you've just done, how do you find it? You talked about film festivals. How do you find a good independent film in a place like the Indianapolis area?
Well, there is a network called the Indiana Film Network, and that's a great place. You can go online, or you can go on Facebook. There's several. If you just even go on social media and type in Indie Films Indianapolis, you can find several places where you can find where different events will be. For me, I just do a lot of promotion for the films I'm involved with, so social media has been really good for me. But there's also wonderful film festivals coming up. I'm so excited about the Indie Film Fest. There's the Jewish Film Festival coming up and the Heartland Film Festival. So most of the indie films you can see at these festivals.
So will your film be shown at any of those festivals?
Well, I don't know yet.
Oh, you're trying. Okay.
Yeah,
you're working on it.
It's not out yet what's okay. going to be out in different film festivals. But like I said, Smerge is in conjunction, and it also is in Gen Con. So I've had other film festivals be in like the indie film festivals as well too, but it's one of those knock on woods, because it's, for instance, some of the upcoming festivals don't come till later on, like in October.
I imagine though, with a sci-fi movie, so a lot of films, you know, without special effects or makeup, when you're filming them, you kind of know generally how it'll look like on the screen. But with a sci-fi movie, you're not adding the special effects till later. So I'm sure when you finally get to see it on the big screen, it's a big deal to see it, kind of that finished product.
Oh, my gosh. Adam, I'm telling you, like, when we had our premiere, everybody was just in awe. I mean, it is. Well, because the problem is, when you do an indie film, I mean, sometimes they're paid, sometimes they're not. There are SAG actors, there's a level. So,
and SAG stands for Screen Actors Guild, and if you're going to be in a major film, you must be a member of that organization.
That's correct. Yeah. You have to work a certain amount of hours and be in certain hours in a movie to be a SAG actor.
And you have to pay your dues.
You have to pay the dues, and the dues are very expensive.
But anyway, I just want people to understand what the certification means.
Yeah.
So go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no. So I think, you know, you work these hard hours, and, you know, you take time to memorize your lines if you're an actor, or the crew has to set up. So when you actually get to the point where you see your work on the big screen, I mean, it's totally amazing. Like, to me, that's the most exciting thing. Being a producer, I'm not on the set as much. So getting everybody there and getting the hype and the excitement of being in a film and having it up there, that to me is just like A+ excitement, because when you see the finished product up there, and then afterwards when everybody's raving about it, that's when you know you did good.
When you're in that first audience, the first audience that gets to see your film after you've finished it, maybe you've had friends and other coworkers look at it, people who worked on the film, that's one group. When you have your first regular audience see it, how do you feel when you're going into that?
Well, I was really nervous for this one. Uh-huh. I mean, I've done several of them, and I have to admit, everyone, you're a little bit nervous, because you really want people to like the film. You want them to be there to support you, but the most important thing is that they like the film. I have to say, this last one, I was really a little bit nervous, but excitement nervous, and I mean, just to see the support and everybody coming out there, the whole Landmark, both shows were sold out, and everybody just clapped and cheered. And I mean,
that's the moment when it all comes together, yeah. Right? That's when you really feel okay.
Yeah,
we did it right. You can look at it all you want, and any filmmaker I've talked to has always said that you think you've got a great product, but until you get people coming out and seeing it who are not tied to it, and the crew or your friends, that's the only time you really know how you did. And that's got to be a really great feeling to have people clap and tell you later, wow, that was a great production.
Well, it is. And I worked on a film. I executive produced a film that was on PBS called A Sign of the Cross. It was a documentary about the Sisters of Oldenburg. And that took
Sister Guerin? Or is it?
It was about all the sisters.
All the uh-huh. Sisters of Providence.
The journey of the sisters.
I see.
And but I bring that up because that was a documentary that we worked 3 years on. Mm. So to see that come and get such highest praise was just amazing. And that was not played at a theater; it was played on WFYI. But that just felt like a big accomplishment.
Well, yeah, it would be. I would think documentary films are hard to peddle. Netflix seems to be a new place for documentary filmmakers to go, and they've been pouring money. And I just saw an article last week that said they're putting the brakes on the funding now because their growth is starting to. The Netflix I'm talking about, their growth is not what it has. It had to stop somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's still a place for documentary filmmaking. But I still love seeing a documentary film in the theater. It's fine watching it on PBS. It's fine watching it on Netflix. But I guess I'm a little different. Documentaries don't tend to do as well in the regular movie theater. So I guess I'm showing my age here.
So with your documentary, how many hours did you have to cut down?
I would say with the documentary, boy, I mean, it was 3 years of hard work. And the thing that was wonderful about that is that we had local editors, filmmakers that dedicated their time to make this happen. This was for the Sisters of Oldenburg, so it was very important. So I would say, honestly, we would have 10-hour day sets.
How many hours of footage? To make a...
Oh, my gosh. I honestly...
Because I always hear stories of like 200 hours to make like a 90-minute movie.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, trust me, my Mac computer is probably maxed out because of all of the footage that we have on there. I really couldn't say, again, because I'm not an editor, but, it's amazing. It's really time-consuming, too, but when the final project comes out and you know you did something good that's going to make a difference, that's the best feeling in the world.
Yes, at my grade school years, I was largely educated, by the Sisters of Providence. And I think I did see that documentary. It was very well done, yes. And I don't think those communities of nuns get the credit that they should. They've made a big contribution, and I think that documentary was a good part of that. I want to ask about something else. When you're doing independent films, I've talked to a few independent filmmakers over the years. The first issue they always talk to me about is funding. Where do you get your money? Because even if you do it cheaply, it's still expensive. How hard is it to get any kind of independent film finance, or where do you go to get that financing?
Well, that's a good question, because it is hard to find funding because, you have to have a special interest in the project. So, for instance... like for the sci-fi film we did, I went to the Toy Pit, which is a local Fisher's business, and they just jumped right in because that fits their genre. I also am a casting associate for Talent Fusion in Indianapolis, which when you were asking previous, like how do you get people involved, well, we have a full casting, and in the film we have several of our actors, so... Talent Fusion wanted to be a supporter too. So I think it's really a matter of like sort of you find out like maybe a niche or who somebody wants to be a part of it or might make work. And then you just have to go in and really sell your film to them and let them know that this is something that is going to be, amazing and something that, truly could make a difference or also just really bring in business even to them too as well as being a sponsor.
Yeah, you were telling me about Talent Fusion. I think you were trying to get me to sign up.
I know, Adam. We're trying to get you to sign up.
I'm not
up.
A very good actor. I used to do school plays in high school. And I think they put me in for two reasons. I can talk loud and memorize lines, but that's it. I didn't have any other skills. I couldn't do any accents. But hey, if you can memorize your lines and speak loudly, they will find a part for you in the school play.
Oh, my goodness.
I imagine, though, when you have a low budget with a film, it's kind of like any kind of, like a small business owner, just like my parents here at Donatello's, you kind of have to be a jack of all trades because you can't hire everyone to do everything. You kind of have to learn how to do all the aspects. You see a lot of independent films where at the end it says written, directed, produced, edited, sound mixing, and it's all one person. It's kind of amazing the responsibility that comes on just a few people's shoulders sometimes.
Well, that's true. I mean, I think one of the most great things about living in Indiana is that we do have a lot of talented filmmakers and actors, and they all want to work. And so we pay people for our productions, but sometimes somebody will just do it for free because they want the experience. And at Talent Fusion, what we do is we do commercials and like print, but we also cast in movies. And so it's just exciting because, I mean, we have it here in Indiana.
Sure. Well, one thing I think is interesting is, and it's only been in recent years, when I say recent years, maybe the last 10 years or so, that we really have begun to grow a culture of film festivals. We didn't have that many when I was growing up here. Almost impossible to find. You know, we're going to have some people on from the Indie Film Fest next week. We've got the, you've talked about your involvement with Film Fest. Heartland is a very big film festival now. You've talked about the Jewish Film Festival coming up. Don't you think a culture like that is needed locally to spawn independent filmmaking?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Indianapolis, we're blessed to have these different film festivals. I mean, I attend them religiously every year. I try to get people out there. This is a way for people to, whether they're local or not, but to get their name out and their films out. And yes, the Indie Film Fest is coming up, and I will definitely be there with Where's Amy, that's coming up on July 13th and the 23rd at the IMA. That's just always fun because it's kind of low-key, but they just have just amazing films that they're either funny or they're serious, and they even have beer there.
They do have beer there.
Yep, so, I mean.
Although that's a little more available in theaters now than it used to be. Yeah, they actually have a nice assortment of things you can buy. But what I've always liked about that is that it's a really good chance to see some good foreign films. They do come here occasionally, but if you want to see foreign films, film festivals, especially the Indie Film Fest, is one good place to go.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting about that is when you go to these film festivals, you can always meet the actual filmmakers and the actors. And I love it because I kind of form a bond with them. And so there's been several of the different festivals in the past where we just really bonded, and we are still friends even 5 years afterwards, where we talk daily or we talk about movies or film. And it's just that quick interaction of meeting somebody and then kind of hanging out with them during the whole week of the film festivals. So yeah, it's a great way to meet people.
Now is it on a committee or a board for Heartland Film Festival?
Yes, Heartland Film Festival, I love. I've been a volunteer for 15 years. I'm on their Truly Moving Pictures jury, which that is really cool because Hollywood studios send Heartland the films, and then we're selected judges, and we will see if maybe that will receive a TMP, Truly Moving Pictures Award. So that's very prestigious to be on that. I'm very honored. But coming up, the Heartland Film Festival is coming in October 12th to the 22nd. The reason I love the Heartland Film Festival is because it really focuses on the filmmakers. I mean, without the filmmaker, you wouldn't have a film. I mean, we've got actors and all the people, the moving parts apart, but it really just focuses on them. But one of the things I'm on a committee for that's coming up this August 17th to the 20th is the Heartland Film Festival Cultural Journey. And the exciting thing about this is taking the cultural journey path, which is from Indianapolis, but goes directly down to the historical center. And with this, they're going to be bringing in Bollywood dancers, the best cuisine you've ever had. Whoa, I mean, and eight films from India. The Consulate India is coming. It's going to be an exciting time. And the best thing about it is the community is really involved in it.
I have a stupid question about that. Are these films in English or in native language? Some places in India, English is more of an established language. Other parts, I think there are several different languages that are actually spoken in India. So do you know if they're going to be in English?
I don't know if they will or not be, but there are several that have been in the past that are in English.
Okay.
And then sometimes they'll have subtitles or vice versa. But this is going to be just a really exciting event, and mostly because the meetings I've been to, we have some amazing people from like Carmel, Fishers, Zionsville. The whole community is going to be involved in it. We just sampled some food from the India Palace, and I'm telling you, after you go to Donatello's, then you got to go down to the India Palace because it's really, really good food. But I'm just really excited because this is the first time that Heartland's going to take on an actual country, and it's going to be India this year. And it's just going to be 4 days of fun celebration, and the films are going to be phenomenal.
Where will this be held now again?
This is going to be downtown.
Okay.
And one thing I just wanted to say
is go ahead, please.
It's going to be like a 4 days of just different events. Like we're going to have yoga. One day you're going to have yoga and biking on the trails of the cultural trail downtown. And then you'll have like a box lunch and you'll go see a movie. So there's a bunch of things you can do with your family, your friends. I just can't wait.
It's going to be various locations downtown. You have to kind of take a look at it? Or?
Yeah. Well, you can go on the Heartland website and find out more information about it.
That's a Heartland Film Festival.
Heartland Film Festival.
I think there's probably a huge market for this because you do see that locally quite a few Bollywood films do come here. I mean, they don't put, 16 showings a day, but they'll put them there, and it's not just the Keystone Arts. They'll put them in Castleton and other areas, and it's not just the Indian American population that's going to see them. A lot of American-born white Anglo-Saxon people are really interested in Bollywood movies because they have such a fun energy to them.
Yeah. Well, and this is going to be an event you're not going to want to miss. It's actually going to be at the Indiana Historical Society.
Okay, which is right downtown near the canal.
Right on the canal. It's 450 West 100 West Ohio Street. Mm-hmm. It's going to feature the culture of India. That's something that I think everybody, is going to really have a great time.
And they have a relatively new building. That's a gorgeous building for Historical Society.
It's just wonderful. And this will be a way, too, where people can come and experience, downtown Indianapolis. I mean, the cultural trail is so an important part of our history that was built. And so we're trying to kind of mix India with Indiana.
And it's interesting because that cultural trail, I used to work downtown.
I've been
retired for a few years. It goes a long way. It goes from one side of downtown to the other. And
it goes right through the Heartland Fountain Square.
It does do that. Yes, it does. Exactly. So it's if you want to walk it or bike it or whatever, it'll take a little time for you, but it's quite an adventure. So it's great to hear. Give those dates again for the Indian Film Festival for Films from India.
The Cultural Journey India is going to be August 17th to the 20th.
Okay, great. And Heartland Film Festival is very much involved with
They are the sponsors.
So they are running the whole show.
We're ready to go. It's going to be a blast.
Well, it's good. I'm glad to see that the foreign films are getting more of a showcase
in
the city.
So before we kind of wrap things up, we want to ask a little bit about you. Now you're... company is Wonder Woman Productions. So, what is it about the Wonder Woman character that you've kind of identified with for so long? And then we'll kind of ask you about how excited you were to finally see on the big screen Wonder Woman portrayed, and actually in a really good way. So,
yes. Okay. First of all, I love the film. If you haven't seen Wonder Woman, you need to go see it. But I'll tell you, the funny thing about me is because I was going to so many different events and just a whirlwind all the time, people were asking me to go here or there. People just started saying, "You're like Wonder Woman." And so I always laugh because I say, I might not look like her, but I sure wear a cape and I can run around like her. So a friend of mine and business partner, Julie Easton, and I started Wonder Woman Productions. And we focus on film festivals and just maybe local events, like we covered Submerged, or, you know, people will contact us. But it's just been really fun because I just believe Wonder Woman just gives a strong female perspective and is a very positive role model. And who would have known, like, 8 years ago when I started Wonder Woman Productions that she would be such a big thing right now. So it is kind of funny with our name. People always want to say, how did you get that? But I was ahead of it long before.
Yeah. How important was it to somebody like you that the Wonder Woman film was directed by a woman?
Oh, that was very important. Mostly because I'm a strong promoter of women in film. So to have somebody just show the strong, oh gosh, I can't even
say. You're getting emotional talking about it.
Well, I am. You know, I know that's so funny, but I mean, I was just so passionate about it because I thought it might be kind of goofy. I didn't know how it would be. But when it came out, I actually went to see a sneak preview of it, and everybody clapped, they cheered, they loved it. And I mean, I really want to support women in film and local film, and so it was just meant to be for a woman to
And you kind of have a message, and it's part of your branding and just kind of part of who you are, that everyone can kind of be a superhero in their own way in their lives. And so you've always kind of been a big promoter of that.
I am. That's the truth. You know, I mean, I always feel like I just think it's important to send out a message that we need to do good things today in this world, and anything you can do to make a difference, to promote somebody, to volunteer, to get out there and help, it's what we should do. That's what we need to do today in today's society.
If somebody is a young person listening to this podcast thinking they might want to become an independent filmmaker, what do you need to do? What do you need to do in school, study in college? What sorts of things do you need to get involved with to get into that world?
I think the best thing would be to do is to study in school, but really go hands-on. Go to different, you know, go on the internet and try to find local films that you can go to IFN, the Indiana Film Network. Go on there where people are always listing. They're looking for actors. Maybe they're looking for people that want to just intern. You know, go to your local college if you're a student there and say, hey, I want to be involved in a film. Is there any way? You know, try to find out. And even if you don't get paid for it, you're learning. And that's the important thing.
Any one last thing you want to say about local filmmaking that we didn't get a chance to ask you about?
I think it's really important that we all come together and support the local film community. And it's important because we have the talent here and we have the actors. We are missing out so much because we don't have a good tax incentive here in Indiana. And that to me is really sad. And that's why I'm always trying to promote local. I mean, I could have gone out to LA or to New York and hopefully made a crew out there, but I really want to try to bring the industry here because we have it. We're missing out on shows like films like Batman, or, you know, different things that are going to Ohio or Kentucky or Chicago, because we don't have that tax incentive. And I don't think that people realize that bringing in the industry would bring in, you know, wonderful jobs, and we have them. We could use local talent people.
I'm with you here, because when I see a movie like The Fault in Our Stars, which the author is from here, and the book was set in Indianapolis, and then they go film it in another city, not here in Indianapolis.
I'm like, it.
Come on, get it. Well, I want to see Indianapolis's background here.
Indiana once had some film tax incentives, and they sunsetted, never were put back in. So it's up to the lawmakers as to whether that does happen again.
Well, we do have a new film commissioner, and I think she's going to really make a difference. And together, even like with Adam, you have your restaurant. I mean, this is going to bring business into restaurants, into hotels. I mean, and working with Talent Fusion, we have this talent here. I mean, we do. And that's what's exciting. And that's why I'm so loyal to bringing film to Indiana and trying to make a difference here.
Amy, I wish we could talk longer. We could, but we do have time limits here. Amy, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure having you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Adam and Larry, and I got to get my cape and get to the In Conjunction.
This week, our main film to review was Baby Driver. Adam liked it a bit more than I, but we both agreed the film was not as good as we had hoped. Adam gave it a B, and I gave it a C+. Amy Pozek provided some great insights into the independent film scene in the Indianapolis metropolitan area. You can also see Amy's work in all the weekly Current publications, including Current in Carmel and Current in Fishers. Please send your comments on this podcast to Hamilton County Goes to the Movies at gmail.com. Our podcast returns next week, once again from Donatello's Restaurant in downtown Carmel. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.